Welcome
to
Photo Dump. This is a podcast by and for working photographers
with
Ren
and Jen. Today we are chatting with Nicole Morrison, a San Francisco Bay Area photographer focusing on food, product, and lifestyle. Her work is vibrant and colorful and fun. I don't know how you can not look at your work and just be so excited. But her clients include Target, Walmart, and Etsy, to name a few. I'm really, really excited to talk to Nicole today. I know Ren heard her speak at a conference a couple months ago and was very inspired by your presentation. And I got to look at your presentation and I feel like our backgrounds, there's some similarities. And so I'm excited to dive in with you today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
And yeah, we're so excited to have you. Like Jennifer said, I was super inspired by your presentation. And I feel like it was kind of the hit of the conference because it was just so relatable. And so I just thought it would be great to talk about your journey of leveling up, essentially, through the different stages of your career.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, I'm so big on transparency, and I think so many conversations have not been had in a transparent way. And I think that's why people love this podcast so much, is because you guys are just like being open with information. And so that's what I always try to do, is just kind of pay it forward. Like anything that someone else has told me, I'm happy to tell someone else. And then also whatever I've done that did or didn't work, I'm just happy to share.
Well, I guess to start, how did you get into photography, just in general? And then you could kind of piggyback off that and kind of do like a quick outline of just like the notable chapters of your career.
Yeah. So I was a journalism student in college and I wanted to be a magazine writer. And I took photo as an elective outside of writing. And then I just immediately loved it. And I felt like this is actually show, don't tell. I get this. This makes sense. This is how I feel like I can communicate so much. And so then I ended up doing, you know, photojournalism, and I really loved what I was learning to do, how I was learning to photograph things as they were happening, working under pressure, which I feel like I've always done well at. But in reality, I was, you know, we were like, our curriculum trained us to be staff photographers, which was like hardly a thing at that time. And, you know, graduating in 2010, it was like so many staff photographers, newspaper or magazine, had been laid off, were being laid off. It was like such a thing. And I wasn't really prepared to work in a freelance capacity. And I also didn't really want to do that kind of work, but I didn't realize until after, because I was so focused on getting out of school. Mm-hmm. And so then I ended up doing just like whatever people would ask me to do, which always ends up being weddings and families. And so I did that for a long time. I did weddings for like 7 years.
Wow.
And there was some overlap with commercial. Basically, I always loved food. I loved to cook. I had a very short-lived food blog. I won't even say what it was called. I don't want anyone to go look for it. but I would kind of like shoot food in my spare time on my own in my apartment. And I always thought, you know, one day I'll shoot food when the wedding business is taking care of itself, which is like not a thing. No business takes care of itself. And so I had been having a hard time in weddings, just not booking as much. And I was a part of this group of women photographers, and someone had this job. And she's like, before I posted in the group, I wanted to see if you're interested in picking up this job. It was, I don't want to name the company, but it was basically photographing people doing things around the home. Like you could hire someone to like come clean for you or run errands for you or build IKEA furniture for you, that kind of thing. And she's like, I know it's like not in your wheelhouse, but I know you could do it. And I did it. And it was like, it was such a game changer, because I thought that like commercial work would be so much harder than weddings. And it's just different. Like they're both hard. But I felt like I could do it. I felt I had so much control. Everyone was working. I wasn't at someone else's party. I woke up the next day and I didn't have a full body hangover. So it was like everything, just such a thing in weddings is you wake up and you're destroyed. So anyway, so then I started picking up a lot of small jobs. And then when the pandemic happened, I just, any wedding I booked, I just gave them their retainer back and kept doing commercial work.
Wow.
Remotely, which is how I was working at the time, was like, sometimes I would go and shoot pictures for a small business for a couple hours. And then sometimes they would send me their stuff. I would shoot it on my own and then upload the photos for them. And that was like the process. So I happened to have two remote clients going into the pandemic that I worked for through like 2021.
Wow, that's amazing. Awesome.
You know, because I was doing that kind of like remote work where you do multiple jobs, there's always like unless you figure out how to run your business in a way that makes sense for you and makes sense for the fact that it's really hard to charge for multiple jobs when you're one person. You kind of like, for me, I hit a ceiling of like, I can only charge so much to do these, you know, to be a photographer and a stylist working remotely. Mm. And also I'm burnt out on doing all of this work by myself.
Mm. So for those two remote clients that you had, you were literally styling. Was it also food?
Everything. So one of them was food, but it, like, they sent me their food and then I would style it to the best of my ability, but I would also supplement with some fresh food because it was like a frozen food product. It didn't always look that great when I prepared it. Mm-hmm. So I would supplement with fresh fruit and vegetables so that the colors would be still desirable, basically.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. And then some of them was like, I needed fresh flowers. So I did have to go get that, you know, a lot of the products to the best of my ability. And especially because it was a pandemic, I would order stuff, the props online versus, you know, how prop stylists go out and get surfaces and they get all the props and they do all that. I wasn't doing it on that level. But I was doing, you know, everything by myself. And a lot of the repeatability came from, I was shooting on paper. So there weren't, you know, there weren't all these different surfaces and stuff. But for like the amount of money that people were paying, like it still all feels very fair to me what I was doing at that.
Well, I was going to ask because I do feel like, I know it was a pandemic focused approach that you had, but I do know a lot of people do these things currently with their clients.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious, like if you feel comfortable sharing your rates, but more importantly, were you charging, like, what did your invoice look like? Were you charging for that time that you would go do those prep days for the stylist role and things like that?
I wasn't. Like, all of those things were listed out on the estimate. And I was showing, these are all the different things that I'm doing because I felt like I had to defend my prices. Like, when you're working with small businesses, like, even when they're spending such a, you know, it's a small amount of money, these jobs, but it's a big deal to them. It's like the first time they're working with a professional photographer. A lot of the businesses I worked with were one or two people. They weren't meant to scale. They weren't made to sell their business. Like, they really didn't have more money than what they, you know, were paying me. It was a stretch for them to sometimes pay $500, you know? And so I was calling out all of the things that I was doing to justify whatever price I was asking for, whether that was like $300, $500, $1,000, whatever. In the beginning, it was like every couple of jobs I would increase the rate because I would realize like, this is a lot of work for this amount of money that I was so nervous to ask for. And then as soon as I'm doing the work, I'm like, this is not enough money for this work. So I'm going to ask for more next time, but that might only be $200 or $300 more. And then you're doing that work and you're like, this is not enough money for this work. And so you do that. And I actually looked back at some of my old jobs and it looks like, well, I hovered around like $1,000 to $1,500 for a while. And then I hovered around $1,500 to like $2,000 for a while. And then the point where I felt the most, like the most fairly compensated was like $2,000, $2,500. But I would not do that work now for that amount of money and all the work that I did.
And you were doing both shooting and styling, all the things.
Yeah, all the things.
You were the everybody.
I was the everybody by myself.
And then how many photos were you delivering for something like that?
Well, this is the other crazy part, is sometimes I was making like between 10 and 20 images a day.
Oh,
and I'm like, how? but they weren't all unique, you know?
Right.
So that's the other thing that I started like having to talk to people about is how unique are these images from each other? Do they share sets? Do they share props? Because I just started realizing how much time everything would take if I made it more unique, but sometimes that wasn't what they needed. They literally just needed pictures of their stuff so they could sell it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times these clients, they just need a lot of content.
Whatever. We need something that they didn't shoot with their iPhone is what a lot of it was at that time. And then if they had, you know, smaller businesses, they don't always have great packaging because they haven't worked with an experienced graphic designer, if they have worked with a graphic designer at all, right? So sometimes, like, you know, if their packaging was a little bit better, I might spend a little bit more time or a little bit more like money to get a really good shot of that product because I would know that it would be really good for my book.
I'm curious to know, like, how you kind of transitioned from estimating those jobs on your own and then for the smaller businesses, and how did you handle usage for the smaller businesses? And then, you know, as you grew, how that evolved?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a loaded question. I know I asked like a lot of things there, but I guess initially, like what I'm most curious about too is I think there's some small businesses that you've worked with that I love their work. So I'm always curious where you found like the happy medium was. I feel like I would love to work with more small businesses, but the threshold of what the budget they have is so, it's so nominal. And in order to do some of our jobs, I just don't think realistically now at the place that probably you and I, all of us are at our careers, like we can do those things. So I'm just curious to see how you scaled that.
And I feel like those small businesses also do not understand usage. So it's just like constantly right. having that conversation over and over and decide, you know, yeah, let's hear it.
I mean, you have to handhold them through the whole process, and you'll never defend your rates and your usage more than when you're working with small businesses, which is when you have the least experience and the least confidence to defend yourself and your rates and your usage.
Yes.
And so it is, it messes with your head. I mean, it's good. I had a close friend who we went to college with, and we both tried out all kinds of different stuff. And she went into commercial a few years before me. And so when I started doing more commercial work, I would float stuff by her and be like, is this reasonable? And she'd be like, yeah, that's more than reasonable. And I'd be like, oh, you know, they're fighting back about usage. And it's like, you know, when you get into the bigger jobs, you're never going to have someone be like, this all looks great, but what's licensing? And why do I have to pay these images?
Right.
It's when you're asking for $500 that someone is like, what, how could I possibly? And you're like, you're getting so
yeah,
much.
You're like, didn't I pay you already to make the images?
Yeah. They cannot take on board, oh, I have to pay for your time and pay for to use the images. And those are two mm-hmm. different things. Mm-hmm. What I did then, and also what I still do now, is the usage is included in whatever I decide my photographer's fee or creative fee is, mm-hmm. because I don't want them doing the math of like, what is mm-hmm. what. It's like, I think it's a little bit more up to my discretion. And in the times that I did break out the licensing, I charged so little that when their license expired, it was like, why? This is like such a small amount of money. I don't even want to bother to invoice mm-hmm. for it because right. I'm going to have to email them and email them again and chase down this invoice for what?
So when the licensing expires on this combined fee, creative fee and usage fee, do you just yeah. kind of at that point renegotiate what you think is fair for the usage going forward, like yeah. outside of your fee, obviously?
Yeah, exactly. And I've noticed that like every time I've also bid on a job with an agent, they also right. do that inclusive pricing. So now that I have more experience, it's a little bit more intuitive. Like this feels like a $3,500 day. This feels like a $5,000 day. This feels like it's a mm-hmm. $7,000 day. And then, you know, kind of seeing what they say. And I feel like I've actually gotten a feel for things. For the most part, sometimes something comes in and you don't have enough information to make heads or tails of it. But So in the beginning, like, you know, earlier with smaller businesses, I would include the usage. And something that I learned by accident was there would, you know, there would be a job and I would have put in perpetuity. And they'd be like, oh, we wish you could do this for a couple hundred dollars less, which I could have, but I didn't leave myself any room to take things away. I offered in perpetuity and I had nowhere to, I felt, take, I could have limited the time, right? But basically I put myself in a situation where my only option was to do the same amount of work for less money versus offering less for less. Right. So like, you know, what I would do in situations where they felt that they weren't getting enough is I'd be like, oh, I'll add a year to this. And that would sometimes be enough for them, with me knowing that they're going to change, you know, their packaging. They're going to change so much about their business in their early years that those photos are naturally not going to be in perpetuity, but still you kind of like, something I ended up telling small businesses is like, licensing allows me to scale my rates to meet your budget. And you're not paying for things that you don't need. Mm-hmm. Like, let me give you a quote for what you actually need.
This is like usage gold for entry level photographers. Cause this was literally, I feel like it took years to learn what you just said. And it's so spot on, Nicole. Holy moly. But you just verbalized it in like the best way. I mean, it's so true. I think just leaving yourself room for negotiation is kind of like the most important thing with, and it's easier to do with the commercial clients because they kind of mention it up front. So then you quote for that specifically. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, we need a little more. And you're like, great, I'll charge a little more, you know? And then you have room to grow. Or like, oh, we need to cut this down. It's like, okay, great. Well, then half a year, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. You want to have room in both directions.
How do you, for some of your, now that you work with the team and stuff, how do you kind of handle some of the smaller business stuff?
Honestly, I send them to a hidden intake form that I don't want agencies and larger clients to see.
Okay.
So when a small business gets in touch with me, I send them to an intake form and it asks them for reference images, you know, send me their website so I can check it out, see what kind of existing photography they have, ask for details about what they need, where they're going to use the images. And it's like a select thing so that they get the wheels turning of like, oh, where I'm using the images is part of this deal. And then it forces them to give me their budget. And this is where a lot of them obviously bail out because I include my minimum budget, which is like the least that it costs me to work the way that I want to work now, which is with dedicated stylists who have assistants. Mm-hmm. And most small businesses just can't afford that.
Right.
And so that's the thing now is that I can't really work with small businesses for the most part.
Do you ever take on those types of projects that are severely below the budget that you generally need to function on just as like a passion project? Or do you just not have time for that sort of thing at the moment?
Well, it's not even about time. It's about, for me, because I did so much work alone and got burnt out, working with a team became such a big part of me goal setting for myself and knowing where I want to go and not wanting to go backwards in a way. And so like not being able to work with a team now feels like a step backwards for me. And is that the kind of like, not to be super woo, but like, is that the kind of energy that I want to take on?
Right.
It's like, it's great. These projects are always, yes, it's great to have creative control, but you're hand-holding, you're spending so much energy in ways that you don't have to spend when you're working with a team. And so I just never want to feel like I'm resenting the amount of money that I'm making and like I don't feel fairly compensated for what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I always want the exchange of energy to feel fair. And so, but it is something, you know, last year was a slower year. And so then I thought, okay, I've established this minimum. I stuck to it last year. I had the best year ever. That was great. But doing the same thing last year in 2023, it didn't shake out the same because there just wasn't as much work. And so then I'm thinking, okay, do I lower my minimum a little bit? Is there what can I go without? But even the minimum that I have is like, you know, doesn't include digital tech, doesn't include a producer. It's just literally having stylists for the things that stylists are supposed to do and giving them an assistant, which I want to do because I think, you know, anyone, you know, with experience is going to work better with an assistant because I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we're all used to working scrappy, but I think it kind of at a certain point you don't want to be so scrappy anymore. Yeah. So it's kind of like, it's difficult. I always want everyone on my team to feel well compensated, to feel what's being asked of them is fair and reasonable and achievable so that when we do the thing, it all feels good. Yeah.
No, I mean, I know what you mean. There's, I have this kind of moral dilemma often when there's a project that comes to us that is a low budget and would require me to be scrappy. And I just am constantly having this battle of like, I know I used to be able to do this and I used to be able to do it really well and create really fun work. And I just don't know how to do it anymore because I know what I need to do like even better work. And better do I work. Want to make not as good work as I can do right now? Even though I knew it was good at what, like, even though it could still be good, you know, it's just like, it's constantly like, how did I do this 3 years ago? And I have no idea how to do it now, you know?
Totally. And then like, what if you're on this job where you're doing all of this extra work for less money than what you usually make, which is all based on like your business expenses and your living expenses and like reality of making a living and your experience and all that, right? What if you take on this job and then you have something come in where you have to do a treatment and it's a really great opportunity and you don't have the time to put into that treatment and that bid or whatever. Like for me, I don't have an agent. So I'm, whenever something comes in that's big enough, I'm reaching out to an agent. So like, and I'm reaching out to see what people's availability is and, you know, all this, what if something like that happens while you're in the middle of this other thing, then it's not just the amount of money that you're being paid that you start to resent. It's also just being in the situation at all. And I don't know. It feels like betting on myself, not to be cheesy, but like, it feels like betting on myself to be like, this is my new minimum. And then I keep moving it up for how I like to work.
I think that's great advice. Like, I think everyone should follow that, but I do think that it is difficult. So what did you end up doing for 2023? Did you end up reevaluating your minimum? Or did you stick with it even though it was a slower year?
Or did you just change your approach altogether?
Nothing came in that was enough money for me to consider lowering my minimum. Like, you know, if someone...
It's like they either have no money or some money.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the basically the minimum, and also because I shoot a lot of food. So it's not just prop stylist. It's prop stylist and food stylist, assistants for both of them, assistant for me. And so when you get to that point, you're looking at like at least $14,000 a day, you know, and like, can I pull it back to 12? I can try, but can I pull it back to $3,000 or $5,000? No, I really can't do that. Right. So like, you know, and sometimes like when I'm talking to someone and they're excited about my work and I'm excited about what they're doing, I'm really tempted to like, you know, I talk to someone and they're like, we only have $9,000. And I was like, okay, let me try and figure it out. And I literally open BlinkBid and I say, you know, how you can save LIGs or whatever, you can save lists, you know, starting points of an estimate. I open it and I'm immediately like, no, Nicole, no, that's not, numbers are real. And you like, you have to, I know what things cost. Mm-hmm. And so it is tricky. I haven't done it yet. I'm not closed off to it. It's something I'm thinking about a lot.
I think that's great. Like advice. I mean, I probably should follow some of that myself. Well, on that note, tell us about one of your first bigger commercial jobs.
The first job that had a budget over $10,000 is one that stands out to me.
When you say a budget over $10,000, are you saying the budget for you was $10,000 or
the whole
production?
$10,000, which felt like a really big threshold to me at the time.
So this is like stage two.
We can call this stage two. And this was $12,000, but it was for 2 days. So it wasn't really $12,000, but it felt like a lot for me to see the $12,000 and to like make an estimate for $12,000. Mm-hmm. And I obviously produced it myself because how could I not? And it felt big, and I stand by the work and all of that, but it was still scrappy. You know, we worked in a studio that had all the props that we needed. The food stylist and I collaborated on the props, and I had been shooting stuff in my kitchenette in my 500 square foot apartment.
Oh my gosh.
So for me, like, rent a studio and have people working for me was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, they gave me, the budget was a couple thousand more, but for one day. So then I was like, oh, this is like twice as big of a job because it's for one day, not two. But also, like, are their expectations twice as big? Like, what have they learned in the last year that is telling them that they need to give twice the budget?
Are they a big company?
I don't know how big they are elsewhere, but they are in grocery stores here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was like a brand that I did know and then went to the grocery store and then I'm like, oh, it's them. Oh, it's, you know, so it was like, it was a big deal to me. And the second time I was so nervous about that shift that I hired a producer to do the job with me. And now it's like fewer people than the least people that I want to work with. Like, I still, even on that time, collaborated with the food stylist on props while we were working. And even the client was like going around the studio and picking stuff out. And so it was still, you know, pretty scrappy, but it did feel like a big deal to me. And it really kind of, I think part of the reason I hadn't reached out to a prop stylist was because I didn't know any yet. I was nervous to reach out to people. I didn't know if my work was good enough that someone would want to work with me. So some of it was imposter syndrome, but some of it was just like, you know, because I have been doing multiple jobs by myself, having a food stylist was like, oh, I can definitely do the styling if I have a food stylist. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I'm like, no, I want a prop stylist. There's so much stuff to think about. I want to think about photo. I have to communicate with everyone. I have to communicate with the client. Like, there's so much, like, your job becomes so much more about communication, mm-hmm. the bigger your team mm-hmm. gets. And so now to think about kind of going backwards, like, I would rather do that in a test. I'd rather be more involved with other stuff during a test. But then on the other hand, tests are such a good time to like work with new people and see what it's like to work mm-hmm. with them. So,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, I have to say that's really awesome that you had a client come back and give you double the budget for one day.
Did you ask them specifically for double the budget, or they were like, we have more money, what can you give us? Or did they come to you with the same budget and you were like, well, based on last time, this is what I actually really need to do a good job, to do a better job, whatever.
This job was through a small agency, which they're kind of like an advertising agency, but they're very small. They're like design, they do design and stuff for the clients too. So the agency had gotten the budget from the client both times.
Mm.
So they did that part, but they, like, the usage wasn't necessarily communicated all the way through to the client. So that was something that I still had to, you know, make sure that was communicated in that direction. Mm. And then I still did like a lot of the creative myself, actually, even though it was through an agency.
Do you charge for that? I'm assuming probably not at that point, but is that something you do? Because you have such a distinct style. So I just assume that you're involved in that creative process.
Well, I like to be involved in the process as much as I can, but it is kind of a read the room situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this agency, they came to me and they wanted my ideas. So I was happy to give them. And we were working in a prop house where I was familiar with all the props. I mean, it was, I do like to be involved and talk to the stylist about what I want. And I feel like, I think some of the credit there is due to like stylists looking at what I do and then, you know, getting the right stuff. So I don't want to take all the credit for that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I came from working in weddings and families where you have like, you can have your style, but you have such limited control over how your work looks. So that when I started doing this kind of work, I had such strong feelings about what I didn't want to do that I think it really informed how my work looked. Like, it made my work more cohesive from the get-go, because there was so much stuff that I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I want humor and color and like for things to be a little bit weird.
You're in stage two now, like you're in stage two of your career. Mm-hmm. How long would you say you were in this kind of like, oh, I'm getting these newer big budgets and I'm learning all of the tools and people that I need to make these big budgets happen? How long were you in that stage before going into just like full on commercial work? And kind of like, what did stage two look like? Because I feel like it probably wasn't very long for you.
It wasn't very, well, I had big opportunities happen while I was still doing these smaller, scrappy jobs because, I mean, in starting in the summer of 2020, there was such a large demand for Black photographers that I was getting opportunities that I was not expecting. Mm-hmm. And so stuff would come in and I would be like, well, I don't really have this in my book. Maybe they're hiring for diversity. Some people would just tell me, which was always a preference for people to just be straightforward about what it is that they're doing, rather than just contacting me for something that's not in my book and not telling me why.
Right, because then you're like, am I just like a third bidder who's not going to get the time of day?
Yeah, then I just have to deduce it. Then I'm just like, oh, are they, this is them telling themselves that they're diversifying their hiring process because they've contacted me. Mm-hmm. But if I don't actually have a shot at this job, right, are they actually diversifying their hiring practices?
Right, right.
Like, you know, and that still happens now. Like a couple months ago, I was contacted for something. I didn't have something similar in my book. It was very colorful. And the vibe I felt like I could totally do, knowing that I used to work exclusively with people, but it wasn't necessarily a fit for what I do. And when that happens, my brain automatically goes to, this is about diversity. Mm. And they didn't give me the time of day for a creative call.
Oh.
And they asked me to do a treatment that was due on a Monday morning at 9. And so I thought, okay, well, they won't give me time to talk through this creative, but they want me to spend my weekend doing a treatment.
Oh my God.
You know, and then I sent the treatment and then I didn't hear from them for a week. So I knew at no point did I feel like I reasonably had a shot at this job. And then to me, I'm like, okay, you actually didn't have your intentions to diversify your hiring is like what you actually did in reality was you solicited free work from me over a weekend.
And I feel like you saw it coming, but did you just feel like you kind of just want to take the opportunity to present either way? Or like, why did you choose to do it?
Yeah. Well, I always want to be a good sport. Mm-hmm. I always want to put my best foot forward. Maybe that is why they're hiring me or they're contacting me, but that's for them and that's for the world. And that's for like, racism is a systemic issue, right? Mm-hmm. So like me as an individual person being the example of more diversity is just, it is what it is. Like I have to know that sometimes I'm being contacted for that reason. Mm-hmm. And I have to have enough confidence to know I've done the work to put myself in the right place at the right time that when they're looking for someone like me, that I fit the bill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's, you know, part of it is that. And part of it is, you know, I did reach out to a rep to bid this job with me. And I said to them up front, I said, here's the job. I definitely want to put my best foot forward. But I have a weird feeling about this because they're not giving me time for a creative call and I don't have anything in my book. And, you know, I feel like this is a diversity thing. And, you know, because of, you know, especially my experience with Apostrophe's mentorship program, we had so many conversations about race and racism. And, you know, myself and the other mentees at that time were having similar experiences where we were being reached out to for jobs. And the person sort of answered the other questions in the email without addressing what I had said. Oh. And so, yeah, so that's something that like, okay, well, you know, that's another thing to add to my list of what I'm looking for in a rep is like someone who can have those conversations with me honestly and be like, you know, hey, I totally get where you're coming from. Let me see if I can get a little more information. Let me, you know, talk to them directly without you CC'd and see what they say. If it's about kind of getting your name in the rotation of people they're considering, mm-hmm. even though this job isn't the best fit, but like for next time, if something's a better fit, then people already like know your name and have seen your work kind of thing. You know, any information I think would have been useful. And in that situation, that rep was the only person who I could have that conversation with. And it kind of just was a dead end.
Hmm. Sounds really hard. I mean, I obviously am not like, I don't have to think about these questions. And I'm so sorry that you do. But I have to say that I whenever I've gotten inquiries that I'm like, this is clearly not me, I can think of photographer X, Y, and Z that's a better fit. I feel like the conversation that my agent and I always have is like, let's just put in the work to make some sort of treatment. We don't have to spend a week on it, but you never know who's going to see that treatment. You never know right. where that person might switch to a different agency. So it's just, instead of getting like, and because I feel resentful sometimes. And instead of feeling resentful, I have to tell myself of like, okay, this is just an excuse to show your work to someone and maybe it'll pay off 3 years down the road. Maybe it won't. Who knows?
I'm always in the boat of like, just show it, put your best foot forward, because you never know. It's always good to be, you know, in the rotation with other people. But I definitely, there was a job that I got last year and I was like, I'm definitely here because I'm Asian.
Yeah.
But I got the job and it was a really good job, but it was so random. So random.
And it's like, you want to take advantage of the opportunity, mm-hmm. you want to take advantage of the connections, maybe the work will be cool, but it is like another layer of, you know, why am I being considered for yes. this? On top of all the
right.
other things.
It's just, it's a mind fuck. Like, yeah. I feel it like is. What people forget is that our careers are like mentally really taxing. Like, you feel really bad about yourself often.
Often, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, and then you're like also alone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And if you don't have an agent in your corner to, you know, to root for you, that makes it even harder.
Yeah. Well, you kind of touched on not being repped, but you do have, you kind of bring in outside reps for certain projects. Like, curious to know how you decide when to bring someone in and what the relationship has been like. Have you been working with one agent, multiple agents? Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So I quickly said that I was a part of Apostrophe's mentorship program, but so in early 2021, I applied, got in. It was right around the time when I was feeling super burnt out from doing multiple jobs. And it just really encouraged me to think bigger for myself and the possibilities of my career. And I had things come in while I was doing that mentorship. And so I would bring them to Apostrophe. And so I had opportunities to work with them on different jobs. And with everything I learned from them through the program about what to look for in a rep and all the many things that they shared about the business side of our business, I also had experiences with them as reps that kind of set the bar for my expectations. And so now when I'm bringing stuff to other people, I have, you know, some experience having worked with a rep. So basically what I'm doing now is, because I would love to have a rep if that's a business partner, and I really like being a part of a team. I like the accountability. I like, you know, having someone to check in with and set goals together, you know, all that kind of stuff. Basically, anytime something comes in that's big enough to bring to an agent, I do, just to have the opportunity to quote unquote date. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, different people in mind. Some people have contacted me, some of them I have contacted. But I do, you know, if something comes in, and it's so unpredictable when something big enough is going to come in, that I try to just always do it, because there's a couple times when I've been like, oh, I don't really want to lose commission on this. Let me see if I can work with a producer instead. But then there's someone that I maybe wanted to work with, and then I don't have something come in for a while.
And I mean, they might get you a larger fee as well.
And they almost always ask for more money than I would have asked for for myself.
So then that commission becomes pretty negligible from like what you thought you would charge.
100%. Yeah. I'm always thinking like, that's going to even itself out in the short term and in the long term. And so I'm trying to also just focus on the long term, but like also, and I think this is gatekeeping and this is a, this could be its whole own conversation, but like when a rep bids on something for you, they're going to get more information than what you would get.
Yes. 100%.
There's more transparency. For rates, for what you can get paid for. I mean, I did a job recently and they straight up asked the producer, what's the most that someone's been paid to do this? We're not getting a feel for what kind of job this is. And they told him, this is the most money we've gotten paid. We've gotten a photographer paid for this kind of shoot. Most of them are in this range.
The client asked that?
The rep on my behalf asked that to the client producer. Side producer, and the client side producer told them.
Amazing.
But didn't tell me. They sidebarred. So like, I've noticed a difference in how I'm treated during the process as far as getting the information that I need in a timely manner. Mm-hmm. And also that numbers, getting numbers is completely different when you're working with a rep.
Do you, when you have reps temp rep you, do you sort of let them just take it away? Or are you still, I mean, it sounded like you kind of asked for some information, but you didn't get any information there and then they sidebarred. So like, how does that usually work with for you?
So what happened with that one was that they sidebarred and then the rep told me, and because they worked really quickly. So they were like, we got this information. This is what we asked. And this is the information that we got.
And here's what I'm going to put on the estimate and why.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And please look at this estimate, which is like another thing that, you know, I recently had worked with a rep on a job and they didn't send me the estimate.
What?
And then I was like, yeah. And then I was like, what?
And they just like sent it off?
They just sent it off. Yeah.
Were you CC'd on the sent one?
No. And then they asked to see my treatment. And I was like, is this like, show me yours and I'll show you mine? Or like, what is this? Because like, I didn't see it. So, you know, it's also like when you're one-off repping with someone, I never know how much stuff they have going on with their other artists. And I don't expect to be treated at, you know, the same as their other artists. But I am paying attention to how they do things to know if there's someone that I'd want to work with long term, right? So,
but if they're taking a part of your fee, they should be
addressing
you, like, you know.
100%. Yeah.
Honestly, it's so hard to find the right fit. I think it's great to date for a while because it is. You learn so much from doing different kinds of jobs with different kinds of people.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm really fixated on this like stage situation.
Okay. Oh, wait, no, I remembered part of this question was, do I stay in the money conversation or do I stay out of it?
Oh, yeah.
No strong preference. I don't mind. I don't mind talking about things, but if it's easier for someone to get information, if I'm not CC'd in an email, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
I'm used to doing things for myself, but also, you know, they are making a commission on the job. I'm happy to let them do work.
It's in their best interest to get you as much money as possible, and you have to just trust them.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like I usually let my agent dictate the price that she feels like is appropriate. There's been just like a handful of times where I'm like, can it be like a little bit higher? And then she tries to get it, and like half the time it works, and the other half, you know, they're like, nah, this is it. And then on the flip side, the client might dictate the fee, and my agent would be like very disappointed about it and feel like it needs to be higher. And I'm just like, I'm fine with it. Like, I will get out of bed for this fee.
Yeah.
And she's like, but the usage. And I'm like, it's fine. It's still, it's like a paycheck sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Same.
But I'm curious, you're not doing all your jobs with an agent, right? You're still taking jobs. Yeah. So I'm curious how your estimates have evolved from stage two to now your current stage three. You're like a professional commercial photographer. You're doing amazing work. You have a team. You obviously now see what is being charged on estimates, like all of the line items. I actually just had someone message me and they're like, I was going to check to see if this estimate was insane because I did it with this temp agent and I was shocked at how much stuff they put in. And it's just like, you don't see it until you see it. So I'm just curious how your estimates have evolved and if there's demands that you're making now that maybe you weren't making earlier, things like advances, prep days, like usage duration, all of that stuff?
So, I mean, all of those things are different than what I was doing before. And it's just kind of come with working from stylists, knowing what they need, asking for those prep days, you know, knowing approximately what things cost, and then running things by the stylist that I'm interested in working with while I'm bidding. Mm-hmm. Because you're bidding on the job, but you're also crewing up the job and holding everyone so that if you get the job, you can do the job. Mm-hmm. So while I have, you know, reach out to multiple someone's, see if they're on hold, see if the numbers that I have in my estimate are appropriate for what's being asked of us, being specific about how many images I promise within a day, running that by the stylist, how many of these kinds of photos do you think that we can do in a day? Mm-hmm. If it's food heavy, then I'm asking the food stylist that. If it's prop heavy, then I'm asking the prop stylist that. Conversations about image uniqueness, like, are some of these images sharing a set? And then we move through this chunk of stuff at this time of, you know, in this half of the day. And then in the second half of the day, we're making more unique images. Like, mm-hmm. there's just so much more to it. And I just know all of the details that go into making the kind of work that I am being hired to make. And I mean, I've pored over a photo editor over the years, looking at how they structure the estimates, looking at Wonderful Machine, how they structure the estimates, looking at any estimate anyone will ever send me, seeing how they structure it, seeing, you know, what's called out at the top, and, you know, client's responsible for this, I'm responsible for this. All of those things are like right at the top, all listed out, really easy to read. Mm-hmm. Something that I do with smaller businesses that I think is borderline obnoxious, but it's effective, is I highlight the usage that I'm including, and then I have a paragraph of definitions, and then I highlight the definitions below. And I'm like, if you read nothing else, please read this. Yeah. And then don't come, you know, please read this so that you don't come and fight me later because you didn't read anything and you don't know what usage is. So I'm not holding people's hands like I did before. Before I would like make a phone script and figure out what I wanted to say when they responded about licensing. I'd have a phone script and walk them through and da da da. Now I'm like, here's all the information. If you have any questions, I'm happy to jump on a call and walk you through the estimate. But usually those highlighted bits are what the conversation ends up being about.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And do you charge for your own prep days, prep time, or are you just sticking with a day rate for a shoot and you're kind of incorporating the amount of time you think will go towards this job in pre-production?
I incorporate it into my photographer's fee so mm-hmm. that I want to give people as little opportunity to point out things that can be removed, you know, or be negotiated, because like I said, I'm kind of more doing like an intuitive thing. This feels like a $3,500 job. This feels like a $4,500 job. Mm-hmm. Knowing how much I'm going to have to handhold the client through the pre-production, making a shot list that we agree to and understand ahead of the shoot, so that when we're at the shoot, we're just working our way through the shot list, you know, just getting their approval and having them make decisions on set is enough work for me and for them. Mm-hmm. And so like I can tell going into a shoot what that feels like to me. And then everything else is, you know, costs basically. Yeah. I have considered breaking out production time. And I think that on some things where I've worked with a rep, they've broken out like one day or something, or you know, the post-production management time. Mm-hmm. But usually working with smaller clients, I feel like including things mm-hmm. is so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I do charge, or my agent will charge prep days on bigger jobs, and it'll just be a random number that feels fair. It's never actually enough for the amount of days I'm putting in, but at least I'm getting something for the time in pre-production. And then also, obviously, because I do a lot of location stuff, there's like a scout, you know, time to go scout, to do a tech scout, things like a fitting or whatever, things like that. But it's definitely been a newer thing that has helped, especially when some of the pre-productions can be long, like they can be weeks.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I saw your presentation at the workshop.
Okay. That one was crazy.
And I was like, okay, this is a big one. This is a lot. And also, like, I don't shoot on location, which I'm warming up to, but because I did, you know, so many weddings and was subject to whatever weather during whatever time and whatever month, like, there's something I find so comforting about being inside.
Having full control.
Not having to think about sun or rain or wind or, you know, anything, or where am I going to go to the bathroom? Just like, I love being in a studio so much. But yeah. And I also think, like, for stylists too, it's so hard because I'm like, I know I'm giving you 2 prep days and I know that that's appropriate for like this shoot, right? But it's like, they're never only spending the amount of prep days that you're bidding for them.
Right.
And I don't love that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think if a client saw how many hours we actually put into their jobs, they would be, no one would ever be able to afford us.
That's true. That's true.
Do you work with any of the same clients that you had a couple of years ago? Like, as you've grown, have any of those clients grown with you?
No, not really. Only the bigger ones. It's so hard because most small businesses aren't built to scale. And so the way that we grow in our career, unless you create a business, right, where you can stay at a certain price point because you create a certain amount of repeatability in your business to be able to, you know, stay working with a certain kind of business. The way that we work, our jobs get bigger. And so the clients just don't always follow if their business isn't meant to be that way. I was looking back at my jobs and a lot of the businesses that I worked for aren't business anymore.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, one of my first clients that I loved working with was a husband and wife team, and they ran a shop. And then when they didn't want to run the shop anymore, they closed the shop. You know, like, it was never meant to be business that they sold. There was no IP. It was kind of what it was. And most small businesses fail too. So like, that's the other thing.
Did you have conversations with any of these clients as your rates and what you needed to do a good job started increasing, or did it just organically melt away? Did you ghost?
Well, for the ones that went out of business, obviously they didn't need my services anymore. But the ones where I started to feel, you know, like, one of the ones that I had was essentially a retainer client, but the contract wasn't set up as a retainer where we're guaranteed to work together this many times. It was just like, this is an ongoing thing. You know, it got to a certain point where I was a lot more skilled at doing the work for them. I was making gifts for them, and the rate that I had negotiated for the gifts was way too low. It was the same as stills, and those do not take the same amount of time. And so I was making better images, more complicated gifts. The quality of the images was better. And I just felt that we needed to renegotiate the contract. It also, learning experience, they had pressured me into doing a work for hire contract. And however, they agreed to give me upfront rights to use the images to promote myself, which was the deal, you know, the deal breaker aspect for me at that time. And so I did the work knowing that things would probably change at some point. Big learning lesson. I reached out to them at some point after a few, maybe like 8 months or something. And I said, hey, you know, we're coming up at the end of the year. I'd love to have a conversation with you looking into next year. You know, I always raise my rates at the beginning of the year. The work that I'm doing is higher quality. I just would love to renegotiate terms with you. And they kind of blew me off. And they're like, yeah, we'll talk later. Here's another shot list. and then about 2 months later, they were like, great news. Our product is now being sold in undisclosed box store, big box store that everyone knows. You know, we just want to make sure that we have rights to use the images in store. And I was like, yes. And this is what I was talking about when I said I was really hesitant to sign a work for hire contract, because this is not you doing your, you know, collateral website, social media, even paid social media, whatever. This is like your product is being stocked in a big box store. And this is a completely different level of value that the images are bringing to your business. Mm-hmm. So like, we have to renegotiate terms. Mm-hmm. And they, again, blew me off and didn't respond to that email at all, and didn't reach out to me. And then like 5 or 6 months later, they were like, here's our new address. Can you please send us all the props that you bought for our photography?
What?
Yeah. That you bought for our photography. And can you send them to us?
No.
Did you do it?
I did, but I had already given some of it away. So I was just like, I'll send you what I have left, but I have already, like, you know, it was some of the props were like kid related props, and I have friends with kids. So I just, like, someone comes over, you want 100 rubber duckies?
Yeah.
Duckies here. You want, like, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Man.
Sorry. You want a box of crayons? I had already given them away.
Oh.
So just in the in the name of, you know, other people hopefully not repeating our mistakes and transparency and all that, like, it's not like I regret it. I used the work got me other work, but I did have to reach a certain point where I was like, I'm not doing any more work under this contract. Mm-hmm. You have to know that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not you have to know that, but
yeah,
you know, this is no longer, you know, a fair contract for where your business is at. Like, I'm super happy for you that you guys are growing, and, you know, I'd love to grow with you, kind of thing.
Right.
Hint, hint, nudge.
Nobody, I feel like nobody grows together, though.
It's so hard. I hear people say that, and I'm like, no sarcasm, good for you.
Oh my gosh. I know we are coming up on time, but I also have a million questions, and I want to definitely talk about marketing and test shoots. Yeah. So let's get into that real quick. Okay. I don't know. Why don't we start with test shoots? I feel like you, like me, love doing test shoots. I guess tell us a little bit about your test shoot process. And I think you use a lot of talent in your test shoots. And so I wanted to hear about how you're finding them. Are you approaching like an agency? Or are you just reaching out to random people that you know? Tell me about that process, because I need more people and I haven't gone down that hole yet.
And so, also, what gave you the confidence to start reaching out? Because I know you've said in the beginning you felt really insecure about reaching out to stylists and things like that. So all that.
I think I reached out without the confidence is the answer.
Take it till you make it.
Write an email and then start sweating and then hit send and then keep sweating and then just hopefully the person is nice, and most people are nice. So then you're like, why was I so nervous?
Yeah.
I mean, testing is to me just the best way to fill holes in my portfolio. And I feel like because I have so many wacky ideas, that the people who have money come to you with their ideas. The people who don't have money don't have ideas, but you can't do all of your like crazy wacky stuff with their budget. So then where do you go with that stuff? You do a test shoot, right? So, or at least that's my approach, basically. I especially like 2021, 2022, I had all these ideas of stuff that I wanted to do, and I kept a list, and I still have a running list of things that I want to do, but especially more people has been a big thing, because that's one of the main places actually that I get inquiries but lose jobs, is not having enough people with food stuff. So that's something that I've been working on, especially last year. I got a studio. It's my first studio. It's shared.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
So I have. Yay.
That's amazing.
I didn't have a studio before that. And I would do some test shoots in my garage. And that's all fine and good when you're just doing tabletop stuff. But having the studio has really given me the push to do more tests and with more people, including with talent, because I'm paying to be there, whether or not I get hired to do paid work. Yeah. So it's like that impetus to just really do test shoots. In the beginning, it was reaching out before I had the confidence. Started, like, in the beginning, I'd reach out to one stylist, like maybe a food stylist, and maybe I would have gotten some props and then reached out to a prop stylist, realized they're also nice, fine people who are not going to be like, why the hell are you reaching out to me? And then, so they're, you know, prop and food. Yeah, usually I have some idea, either it's an overarching idea of like one that I did 2 years ago. I wanted to do something where the set and the wardrobe were all informed by the color of the food. And so we did, one of my ideas was like an insane bowl of spaghetti and meatballs. That's just like way too big and like so much Parmesan cheese. And then she's like wearing red and the table's red and the background, like everything is red. And so for those kinds of shoots, I usually make like a mini creative deck, basically going over my ideas and what I want to do. And then I reach out to stylists and I'm like, hey, I want to work on this shoot. Here's my ideas. Are you interested? What's your availability like? And kind of go from there. So that's kind of one approach to it. And then since I've built, you know, friendships with stylists, and sometimes we want to do something that's just easy. Either we're tired or we just want to fill a couple holes in the portfolio. You know, I'm doing one in a couple weeks that's like, it's all one-offs. It's like a chicken and we wanted to work on whipped cream dollops and something else that's, oh, a cheese pull, which are, you know, all unrelated mm-hmm. things. We're just doing a day of one-offs. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's that and just like getting to work together and not have to worry about client approval and not even having to worry about a through line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then as far as talent, so people started reaching out to me, models started reaching out to me, usually through Instagram, DMing me and asking to be kept in mind. And so I have like a spreadsheet, which I also have like a spreadsheet of like stylists and like all their categories. So I can go in and I filter them when I'm trying to think of, you know, who's the best fit for something. But it's hard for me to keep track of models that way. And it's so much easier to go to an agency and say, I'm looking for like people in this age range. I'm open to different ethnicities. I'd love to see who you think is a good fit for this. Whether it's like, I mean, for me, a lot of the time it's like, I want someone like smiley, kind of more bubbly versus, you know, serious. Mm. I'm not really usually looking for serious facial expressions.
Are you paying for these models or are they, it's like a trade? And or also your team?
Yeah, it's usually trade across the board. And then I buy everyone lunch and I, a lot of times we'll bring in like bagels or something like that for breakfast. I haven't done a paid shoot. I'm curious about it. I think for me, the way that I do test shoots, it's a little bit more collaborative. Like I show people what I have in mind, but then I leave them a lot of space to bring stuff that they want to do because mm-hmm. we all work. We all do paid jobs. And when you're doing a paid job, you're doing what someone else wants mm-hmm. you to do. But you have things that you want to do that you don't get to mm-hmm. do. Right. So when I do a test, I'm usually like, is there anything you've been wanting to do? Is there anything weird you've been wanting to do? Tell me. Don't be afraid to tell. Like, if you think you have a weird idea, here I am. I'm for you. So like, let me know what it is that you haven't been able to do and let's do it.
Yeah.
I think something that I'm considering now is like, if I want something in my book that's so specific, that I want to be more specific about what I'm asking of people, then I feel like compensation comes into play because I am hiring you to play out my idea mm-hmm. versus like, mm-hmm. you know, come to my sandbox and let's play.
Yeah. For when you're reaching out to agencies, modeling agencies for a specific look, how far in advance are you doing? I think for me, test shoots always come up so last minute because mm-hmm. of availability and changing availability. I don't have a studio, so it's not only the stylist, it's the studio, it's so many factors. And so when I've had a hand model or somebody, it's usually a friend that I know and it's just very last minute, like, are you available? Can you come kind of thing. So how does it work when you've been, you know, working with like an agency to get models?
I haven't had any, I mean, sometimes availability is an issue. So like, I don't want to reach out too early. You know, if I'm working on something that's a bigger concept where the whole day we're shooting something like the one that I told you that was focused on different colors of different foods, like that was a pretty big one. And I didn't want to line up the models a couple weeks ahead of time, but I did have to switch models because those people got, you know, someone got hired for a paid mm-hmm. job. And then, but then in the end, I was really happy with who I ended up getting. And so it's just kind of accepting that that's a possibility that you might, yeah. there might be a swap or someone might not be available or oh, that person's actually in LA and they're not going to come up for a test shoot. And just kind of being flexible with who they want to give me. But I feel like because my style is pretty unique to this area, that there, the agency, I work with a specific agency frequently because they're just so fast. I have a relationship with them. And once I have a relationship with someone, I just keep it going.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I feel like a lot of the work in this area is very like lifestyle-y and like a more classic look. And so a lot of the models in this area don't have work in their book that looks like mine. And I think that might be part of it, why they're willing to just kind of jump into whatever. I had a model on a test that I did in October, and kind of on the vein of what I talked about just a couple minutes ago, is like her, when I looked at her profile that they said that, you know, has like a dozen photos or whatever in their stats, all of her stuff was like kind of serious and editorial and kind of like sultry. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to like work on making her laugh. I'm going to have to make some jokes. I'm going to have to, you know, draw it out of her. But then she came in and she was like, I'm so excited because I always get hired to do this like very serious thing. And she's like 19, 18 years old.
Oh.
And so she came in and she was like so bubbly. Aww. I actually had to like bring her energy down a little bit, just like with mirroring and being like, you're doing great. You know, just like, I didn't have to go up with her. I had to come down with her a little bit actually. But, you know, you just never know what other people are looking for.
Yeah. And also, that's kind of the magic about testing, is like a lot of it kind of happens organically. And you might go into it with an idea and you might come out with it with like a slightly different outcome.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like testing is just such a, just so good for creative freedom.
It's so nice. And like, you know, a lot of times a client will ask you to do something and you're like, oh, I preferred this thing like that. Or I liked it when, before we switched plates, I liked this cup better. I liked this beverage, but like whatever it is, sometimes the finished shot that the client approves isn't what necessarily everyone would have wanted. Yeah. But on this, it is what everyone wants if you all mesh well, right? Yeah. And you get to move through shots at a much different pace than when you're working with clients. So it just is like, it's kind of for me, it's a morale boost. It's like being able to work with people and we get to say what we want, say what we like, and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing?
Mm-hmm. Question mark?
How do you approach your marketing? Do you put in a lot of time into it? Do you use LinkedIn? Do you newsletters?
I saw LinkedIn on your website. And so that's why I was like, oh, I have to ask her about this, because I do feel like there is...
It's like a whole LinkedIn approach, I feel like.
There's a whole LinkedIn approach. I know nothing about. But yeah, I was curious to hear, you know, how you approach and if LinkedIn has been a big success for you, because it is on your website very prominently, I feel like.
I honestly didn't even think about it that hard, but I am using LinkedIn and I'll tell you how. I'm not really using it socially. I'm not good about posting there. I'm also not good about posting on Instagram, but I use LinkedIn to figure out where people are working and to find their contact information. And so I have LinkedIn Pro, and then I use something called Find Prospect, which helps you find people's jobs and emails, and it links together with LinkedIn. And so I use it to find agency contacts. I use it to find in-house contacts. I'm doing some, you know, I'm contact building. I'm building my contact list for email marketing, for my newsletter, but also direct outreach. So between my actual commission work and the test work that I'm doing to like fill holes, when I'm testing, I'm thinking specifically about at least a couple people that I'm going to pitch myself to based on the test. So like, you know, if I want to work for a yogurt company, then even if we're doing one-offs, I will say to the food stylist, I'd love to do a yogurt because I want to pitch myself to a couple of yogurt companies. I found their contacts online, and then I'll make a digital postcard and send it to them and be like, hey, I love XYZ about what you're doing. I'd love to be considered for your upcoming photography projects. Here's, you know, a recent thing that I did, and then I'll link to like looking at more of my work.
Yeah, and your digital postcards are really fun. I remember you included one in your presentation. I was like,
yeah,
such a great idea.
I need to go look at this presentation again.
I hired a graphic designer to do a brand identity for me, I think at the beginning of 2022. So like colors, fonts, they're not illustrations, but I have different things. I have different like fruits
stamps and
veggies,
and things.
Like graphics. Blobs.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I also had her design for me a template for treatments, a template for PDF portfolio meetings, and a footer for my newsletter, which I send quarterly-ish, and the digital postcard. So I have like four versions of the digital postcard that I use that have like different colors in them, so that when I'm adding images, I kind of choose just based on the color story.
Do you mind sharing like a range of how much that cost you?
I think I paid like $3,000-ish dollars, maybe a little bit more.
That's a really good price. Oh my gosh.
Really good. She was portfolio building. I got her at a really good time, basically. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of exploring, you know, styling and creative direction. She is a graphic designer. She kind of like, you know, multi-passionate, and I think it was like $3,000, $3,500, mm-hmm. something like that. We like broke it up into two phases. It really, having marketing materials that you feel really good about is such a big like factor in actually sending out the things that mm-hmm. you have to send out to promote yourself and feeling good about it. And I know that for me, when I feel good about it, I'm more likely to do it. And mm-hmm. I went through that with my wedding business too, where I hired someone, a graphic designer, and I felt so much better about everything, more professional, and just more willing to put myself out there. And this even more so, because you really have to put yourself out there a lot more. And mm-hmm. knowing that the people that you're marketing yourself to have so many other photographers marketing to them. So they really are looking at a lot of stuff that we do and just wanting to stand out. And so I thought, you know, I love color. Why do I want a website that is white in the background? Mm-hmm. And like, how much fun can I have with this while still being taken seriously? It's basically like the line that I'm trying to walk all the time is like, how goofy can I get, but still be treated as professional photographer?
Yeah. Well, your website looks amazing. I just signed up for your newsletter. No, but I do. I feel like I just hired someone to do a branding. I can't even say refresh is the first time ever that I've like hired anyone to do anything for me.
I'm so excited for you.
I mean, and it like, I wish I went as bold as you did, but you know, it's just like everyone has different styles, and
It
feels so good to have like a cohesive look and intention behind everything, that it, even though I don't think I got any more professional, I feel more professional presenting.
100%. And it's also like, as photographers, we have really great taste.
Yeah.
So not having, you know, those marketing materials look the way that you would like hope them to look. Mm-hmm. You just have something else in mind, basically. You're like, I know this could be so good.
Yeah.
And you just need that help. The same way people need us. Mm-hmm. We need other people. And, you know, like all of these things are jobs for a reason.
Yeah. Well, she did a great job. Your website looks phenomenal.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did you have any success, or have you gotten any jobs specifically from any of those outreaches?
With smaller businesses, yes. With bigger ones, it feels like more of a slow burn, mm-hmm. and just kind of like getting, you know, because I don't only want to be sending people my newsletter. I also want to be reaching out to them directly and saying like, oh, I saw this thing that you did. It was really cool. Here's some new work I did. You know, would love to stay in touch with you, basically. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time they don't answer, but sometimes they do answer. And that's when I will say, hey, I'd love to add you to my newsletter so that I can stay on your radar. Is that okay with you? And they're like, yeah, sure. You know, if they respond at all, they're likely to respond in the future. They're likely to say, yeah, go ahead and add me to your newsletter.
I don't even ask. I just do it.
I don't even ask.
I don't always ask. But if they respond, uh-huh. then I, you know, ask.
Yeah.
I mean, technically you're supposed to ask everybody, but that would be impossible. Yes.
Right.
And, you know, there's an opt out if anyone ever wants to opt out. And there's all of the, you know, depending on who you're emailing and where, like whatever protections they have for marketing emails is another thing that we have to consider. But it is like, you know, when you're trying to get agency contacts and when I'm using Find Prospect and using LinkedIn, you still don't know what the people at agencies are working on. So it still is like, you know, throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. See if the person that you're reaching out to is even working on food accounts, you know, like maybe I'm reaching out to someone and they work on car stuff and it's like, okay, see you never. But, you know, it's kind of the macro stuff is a numbers game. And then the other stuff, it's like directly to a food company or a product company. If, you know, I think my aesthetic matches or, you know, whatever the thing is.
Mm-hmm. So great. I feel like you have such a good head on your shoulders for the business side of photography that I feel like we need to have a whole other conversation with you about just business related things. I mean, I'm really inspired by you, Nicole.
Yes, totally.
I mean,
me too.
I feel like it's so easy to not be, you could be a great photographer and not be successful because you can't run a business. Mm-hmm. And that's just such a shame because running a business is not, I mean, the business stuff is not so hard to understand that we can't understand it. Like we understand the inverse square law. There's no reason that we can't understand the fundamentals of business. Right. And before I quit my day job, I was actually so nervous that I actually took a night after work. I took a night class that was like business entrepreneurship 101. And it was so freeing to me to realize that like basic business concepts are pretty basic and they apply to us, and just understanding it at some level rather than being afraid of it or ignoring it, actually it made me feel like I could be more creative in how I ran my business versus pretending to not be a business. Mm-hmm. Like that actually gave me way more anxiety than just knowing the basics of running a business and doing the marketing and doing the stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure you've been following Rob's posts on his Instagram with all of the income things. And I feel like it's so eye-opening to me, just first of all, the differences in income, but also reading the comments, you can tell based on how people are commenting, how business oriented they are. I feel like the epiphany that I had is just like, oh, if you want like a financially stable career in photography, you need to make it a career and a business. It can't just be like a fun hobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is for some people, but I have not, like, I can't imagine it.
I think the people who kind of like fail up and manage to do really well without treating themselves like a business are the exception and not the rule. Yeah. And I think that for me, like even with my taxes, right? Like I wanted to understand how to do my taxes, even though my end goal was always to hire an accountant to do it for me.
Yep.
And part of that is just wanting to know how things work in general, because I'm curious. Mm-hmm. But another part of it is like, reasonably, I want to know that they're doing the right things for me. So I want to have a pulse on what it is that they're supposed to be doing to some capacity, so that when I'm hiring them to do it, I'm not being, you know, taken advantage of or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, this was amazing.
Thank you so much. I feel like there's a lot of questions we didn't get to, but that'll be for part two.
Sure. I'm happy to do part two.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time and chatting with us.
This was just a wealth of information, and I hope to have you back soon.
I would love to be back. I feel like I went on so many tangents and
they were fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah. I hope that everything is useful to everyone. But also just from experience, I know how helpful it is to just hear people talk about their experience without even just like anecdotes, just like stories and stuff without even. So anyways, really grateful to be here. I've listened to every episode.
Oh,
thank you. It's just.
Thank you. Great to be here. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can buy us a coffee or become a member. Links to support in show notes.
Photo Dump was created by Ren Fuller and Jennifer Chong. Edited by Aviv Rubenstein. Music by Daniel Smith. You can find us on Instagram at photodump.club.
Thanks for listening.